With Wine Me, Dine Me program. And here's the original version of 3 Days.
Was great. Who was that? Was that
Thank
Willie?
You. That's Willie.
Willie Nelson. Willie Nelson, ladies and gentlemen. And up next, Wine Me, Dine Me.
Oh, I can cook too, on top of the rest. My seafood's the best in the town. Yes, I can cook too. My fish can't be beaten. My sugar's the sweetest around. I'm a man's ideal of a perfect meal, right down to the demi-tasse. I'm a pot of joy for a hungry boy, baby.
Yeah, I'm cooking with gas. Hey, it's first Wednesday of the month, April 7th, and you're listening to WSCA LP Portsmouth Community Radio, and I am Rachel Forrest with Wine Me, Dine Me here, as always, with...
Allie Goodwin.
Allie.com. Allie. Just Allie Goodwin.
Gal Foodie.
And in studio guest is John Forte from Strawberry Bank.
Hi, and happy spring, everybody.
Happy spring.
Happy
Isn't
spring.
It great?
It sure is a welcome change.
He's wearing shorts for all of those of you in radio vision land.
Don't frighten
definitely. No, it's sunny. That means the weather is warmer.
I don't know. There were people. They've been people wearing shorts
for weeks.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah. I'd stare at them saying, "Are you really wearing shorts?" Everybody's really wanted spring to bust out, and they're busting out their legs, their bare legs.
This is my first big day with flip flops. So.
Oh yeah, flip flops.
Flip flops.
Oh, I got to go into my closet and pull out all my flip flops.
Dust them off.
Better than the shorts. I ate a salad out of my garden.
See already,
Trump.
Yeah,
he trumped
us. Yeah, nice flip flops.
What did you eat? What's coming up out of your garden?
Well, on top of some spinach and corn salad and arugula, I put in Angelica, salad burnet. The sorrel is already, you know, it has full-size leaves, marjoram buds and mint buds and all kinds of things. They're really up out of the ground enough to eat. Lovage. So I've been cooking out of the garden for about almost a month now. But the salads at Easter and Passover were laden with great things from the garden.
Now, some of the things you mentioned might be some things that people aren't used to. For example, the Angelica and the salad burnet and the lovage. Can you tell us a little bit about what those are?
Well, I think what's most important about them, apart from the fact that they're historical herbs, is that they're things that fed New Englanders 12 months a year in our backyard. So plants that really grow right through into December and then are back up by March. Angelica is a great flavorful plant that people would candy. They make chartreuse from it, but you also can cut it up and put it in salads. Lovage tastes like celery, but it's perennial, and it's up 11 months of the year almost.
And salad burnet tastes like cucumber.
Yeah,
I love salad burnet.
But all of these things aren't like iceberg lettuce with zero nutritive value.
Yeah.
They also come from this whole heritage of food as medicine, and they have wonderful properties that the colonists that first came here and then every generation of immigrants afterwards would have said, are spring tonics. It's eating the first knots and buds of spring that purges out that winter crap that we've all just been through.
Potatoes and lard.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the dietary mix.
Yep.
Now, the reason John Forty knows so much about this is that
he is the guy, the go-to guy for this. John, tell us who you are and what you do.
Well, I'm curator of historic landscape over at Strawberry Bank Museum, and been there about 7 years now to teach about garden history and herbalism. But I've also been one of the founding members of Slow Food Seacoast, which is another great organization. I think you should look online for both of them.
Yeah, slowfoodseacoast.org.
Yeah, before I came here, I did the same work for a museum called Plymouth Plantation, and I think for me, all of this has been a great education that helps us look at native plants and heirloom plants as a way to learn from the past to help create a more sustainable future. So,
such a cool guest. What a perfect guest for today.
For spring.
For spring.
So what are some new things that are happening in the gardens this year at Strawberry Bank?
Well, we've started up a new Victory Garden program that really is about teaching the foundations of organic gardening, since we do garden organically, and growing out heirloom plants, but also how to can and compost and save seeds and in a way that really gets a whole family engaged. And, you know, for me, earthy gardener type, the new program is a little bit different. I'm creating mobile media tours of the historic landscapes so that you can go in with an iPhone or a cell phone and learn about the historic landscapes here in Portsmouth. And I hope that that would include everything from Native American voices in the landscape, talking about what it would look like going up Puddle Dock in a canoe, all the way to hopefully Michelle Obama telling you about why our Victory Garden is an important part of a national picture.
Wait, I don't understand how the cell phones tie into that. Can you explain that?
Well, you can go through the site and maybe listen to an oral history from somebody like Ronnie Pecunis telling you about planting the tulip poplar when the war ended for Mother's Day. That's now this huge tree in the landscape. Or punch in number 9 in your phone and learn about heirloom plants. Or hopefully hear Michael Pollan tell you about why they're significant. Things like that. Mixing up a historical voice with contemporary voices. Hopefully like you as well.
Oh, cool. That's great.
So those are some of the new things in the landscape, but also just trying to connect people up to local and seasonal here in our own backyards. So one of the events that I think we'll talk more about later is a great Earth Day event that we're having for Slow Food and Strawberry Bank, and but we can talk about that later. I want to hear more about what you two are up to.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, is it, what you were just talking about brings to mind this cookbook that I've been working on for a year.
I was waiting for it to just drop.
Because I hit send on the file that went to the editor at 11:30 on April 1st. It was due April 1st. And one of the things, it's with the chefs from Arrow's restaurant, Mark Geyer and Clark Frazier. And one of the things that we really concentrated on was, why do we eat? Why are the different ingredients in our main cuisine? What makes main cuisine, main cuisine? And, you know, why are we using corn and why are we using, you know, different fish and smoked fish at different times? So we went into a little bit of the kind of culinary anthropology of where these things come from. One of them was interested me was molasses. Mm. So, I mean, do you have any, we knew a little bit about why New Englanders use molasses. And there's a whole history of the triangle trade with that.
And with the whole triangle of trade, it introduced a lot of ingredients to New Englanders that were about preservation, whether it was the molasses being sort of the unrefined sugar, and part of that has to do with economy and being Yankees and not always paying for white sugar, but your ability to use it as a preservative, like honey was used as a preservative. It tied into the whole rum trade, rum and molasses. And so when you look at old New England recipes, they also include things like making cherry bounce with the native choke cherries and the rum, and then adding in molasses as a sweetener if you were among the sort that was a thrifty Yankee, or using refined sugar if you wanted a different flavor. I happen to like the refined sugar in that instance, but still put molasses in my coffee, you know, because of some of that heritage that's passed down to us.
And things like Indian pudding from by necessity, just corn, milk,
things that
molasses
stored well, but
things
you didn't
stored
mind
well.
Heating that milk to a degree that food safety came into play.
Right.
And that's another thing we learn as we look back, pairing up science and history, is how many of the herbs and spices the people used were actually about preserving food quality. They weren't using herbs and spices to mask the flavor of rotting food. They preferred not to eat them, just as we don't prefer to eat them today. But science and chemistry is showing that they actually had properties as antibacterial and antiseptic plants that were helping us stay healthy.
Oh, which herbs and spices did that?
Oh, just about, most herbs and spices have properties like that. I mean, your grandmother didn't worry about using a wooden cutting board because she put lemon on it or garlic on it.
Oh, I
see. If you put sage in the cavity of a bird, it's because it's antibacterial and it kept that from going off prematurely. But a million, cayenne and cinnamon and ginger and nutmeg and clove and, you know, half the herbs and spices you can dill for pickling is because it's antibacterial and antiseptic. And so it's partly looking back. But again, I want to hear more about that cookbook.
So anyway. Yeah, well, part of it was we went we started working on it in July, and we knew that we had to turn it in April. So we did all the photos in September, because we didn't want to have Maine shots of Maine just covered in snow. And who knows? I mean, the weather changes so much here every day, as we know from this past winter. So we went all over the state with our photographer. We went to a Pemaquin Oyster Company, went out to the lobster beds and saw how the lobsters are harvested and cultivated. We went out on lobster boats, the oysters are cultivated. We went out on lobster boats, so we learned all about, you know, the rules and regulations for lobstering. We went to a couple of different artisan bakers, Standard Baking in Portland, who've been around for, you know, a couple dozen years already. Let's see. And also we went to Silvery Moon Creamery, saw the cheeses being made, which was quite interesting. I mean, this is huge room with all of this shiny stainless equipment, and it just was humid, and the air was just this weird smell, not unpleasant, but it was just, you know, and they were just like raking the curds
over and over again.
I was like, that is tedious work. And we went foraging for mushrooms.
Cool.
And the chefs at Arrow's, I mean, they know exactly what to look for. You know, they could see little signs everywhere to find the black trumpets. So that was the first part. And then they had a whole list of the recipes that were supposed to be in the book and, you know, not written down. So we had to cook. We spent a couple months. I would go up every week, and we spent a couple of months for hours and hours a day with four chefs, everybody cooking, and I'm running around writing everything down. Making sure, because they don't measure anything, right? How much of butter did you put in there, and how much of that and this?
Cool. Cool.
We would have one.
Call me to taste, huh?
I know. We would have one whole day, like one whole day with scallops. By the end of that, you're like, oh my God, I can't even. Lobster day was cool, though. I mean, they got everything in. We made every single recipe a couple of times. So
cool.
And then the writing introductions for each chapter, 175 little paragraphs for each recipe. 27 sidebars about stuff like molasses and preserving and a little bit of history, a little bit of how to shuck an oyster, stuff like that.
It's a big deal.
The whoopie pie. Yeah, it was. I had no idea what to expect because I'd never done it before. But we had a great time.
And so on bookshelves...
May 2011.
But that's good. Gives us all something to look forward to. And yeah. Is it going to be, who's the publisher?
Running Press. Yeah, we'll have over 50 color photos.
It's fancy.
Yeah, we get some really good photos of beautiful Maine.
What was your favorite recipe in the whole book?
Oh, wow. There's a lobster chowder in it that's really good. And Ooh. A crab chowder that's Ooh. Excellent. Yeah. To use a lot of butter. It's a lot of butter.
You hate that. Bacon, too? Did they wrap the butter in bacon before
they used it? We wrapped some cod in bacon. Oh. We wrapped, yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah.
That's great.
We have a lobster roll, whoopie pie.
Yum.
Yeah, really cool stuff.
The main stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. After a while, I realized that I was mentioning bacon a lot when I was writing. Like, well, there was a whole thing about ice cream, and we talked a little bit about, you know, how you can experiment with different ice cream flavors, and I'm like, even bacon. Because I just had bacon and chocolate ice cream at a dinner with John Popper Medlin.
Oh, that's funny.
Bacon and dark Ooh. Chocolate. So
thanks.
And you're listening to WSCA Portsmouth Community Radio 106.1 FM, and you're listening to Wine Me Dine Me with Rachel Forrest
and Gal Foodie from galfoodie.com.
Yep, she doesn't have a name. She's
no
just
name
Gal
anymore.
Foodie. And we're here with John Forty, who is the curator of the historic landscape at Strawberry Bank.
Does Strawberry Bank have a cookbook? Have you guys put one together?
I could write
food?
One for you.
I know.
Let's talk about that. I think that sounds great. I think that's the sort of cookbook that a place like Strawberry Bank would and should get involved with. Because really, when you look at plants and food, there's so much to learn from the past. And it's not that you want to be wed to the recipe as it existed. Take it into the 21st century. But
yeah.
There's a lot to work from that helps us consider things we don't eat every day, but that we really could stop importing foods 5,000 miles to get.
Well, one of the things we had a lot of fun doing was referring to these really old Yankee cookbooks from the 1800s.
Yeah, that's my favorite.
Yeah, and, you know, how do we update that? How do we make it more, I mean, and they didn't necessarily have to be updated. I mean, that's the way we like to cook today, is from scratch.
With lots of butter.
With lots of butter.
Measured in pounds, right?
Exactly.
Let's cook that Indian pudding for 5 hours,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's amazing how much is available online, too. You go to things, websites like, I think it's America Cooks. Every historic cookbook that was out there has been scanned into this database. And you
it's
can
really
find
cool
recipes. And I mean, right now, so much more is at our fingertips. And when we start looking at what are the heirloom plants that help us renew America's food traditions, I think it's a great inroad to kind of explore what recipes, the roads they took us down, because usually they were trying to find a way to eat from our local economy, just like we're doing again here in the 21st century.
Yeah, isn't it interesting how it's repeating itself? People are really gravitating towards the fish. You know, getting the co-ops and the CSAs going
and the farmers
and the
market.
Farmers
yeah,
markets.
Farmers
I mean, it's
corner
just
stores will be back replacing the convenience stores
yeah.
and the empty businesses that were big chains and things like that. You think we'll see we already are really seeing an amazingly heartening resurgence of local growth in the economy, and I think it's about people caring where things come from and recognizing that we are what we eat, you know, and that's been said so many different ways through history. The cook is half a physician, grow vitamins
right.
outside mm-hmm. your back door. It's better to pay the grocer than the doctor. And I think we're kind of starting to relive that understanding again now.
Oh,
I blanked. No, I was, and I blanked, so I'm sorry.
Well, I'm going to let people know that programming on WSCA LP Portsmouth is brought to you by our members and by White Heron Tea. Locally owned White Heron Tea offers organic and fair trade teas, specialty blends, and chai. Available at cafes, grocers, and retailers or online at www.whiteherontea.com. Programming is also brought to you by Terracotta Pasta, makers of fresh gourmet pasta, ravioli, and sauces, located just south of the Kittery Traffic Circle at 52A Route 1, Kittery, Maine. More information at 207-475-3025. And programming on WSCA LP Portsmouth is brought to you by our members and by Heron Pond Farm, building community through local agriculture. From our fields to your table, more information on CSA memberships at heronpondfarm.com or 603-591-8720. And if you want to underwrite, email underwriting@wscafm.org. Yeah, farmers market. That's going to be great. I've been going to those winter markets at the Wentworth Gardens.
Those are great.
Yeah, and in Exeter. Oh, they're just jam packed.
Popular places.
Yeah.
And the farmers are learning so much new, they're creating new products to bring to market that really are helping us get through winters. It's so nice to buy little soaps and wool felt insoles for your shoes along with your parsnips and spinach.
Oh, I didn't see those.
Oh, yeah, great stuff.
All kinds of stuff. I know what I blanked on earlier.
What? Oh, it's all coming back to you.
No, I was just going to remind everyone that if you have a question for Rachel or Galfoodie or John, you can go on to Facebook and find Galfoodie and ask it there, or go to Twitter, @Galfoodie, and ask your question. We can answer it live on the air. It's almost like you're here.
Yeah.
Wow. It's cool.
It's like you're here.
Technology. Just a little reminder. So, John, do you want to tell us? You've got this really big, crazy cool event coming up for Earth Day at Strawberry Bank that ties everything together, pretty much your history and your gardens and your slow food, everything. So you want to fill us in?
Sure. It's an event I started at Strawberry Bank about 6 years ago as a way to bring the community together to help us clean up and open up the gardens for spring. The museum opens on May 1st, but you know how it is in the world of nonprofits. It's always great to not just work with staff, but bring in a community of people that care. And when you have an organic gardening site, that's especially important because you need to condition the soil, turn the compost, add it into gardens, but also, again, build a community of people who have a vested interest in it. So this event is really about bringing everybody together that is willing to come out with tools in hand or use the tools we have there. Families are welcome to come, and we have work plans that take you into each and every garden, and we pair up people with different needs and interests so that you go into the gardens, whether it's a raised bed 17th century kitchen garden that Mary Sherburn kept or a Victory garden that the Pecunis family kept, everything in between. And we'll have work projects out there in the landscape through the morning. If you are interested, have a lot more on the Strawberry Bank website about that. But basically, we'd love it if you could let us know in advance you're coming because of two other factors. We'd like to know if you're bringing tools, but also after that event in the morning, we have a slow food potluck lunch. And that really is about pairing up people with compatible interests, this great gardening community, to gain a sense of what you could prepare from your gardens, even at this time of year, or from your local economy. And so for everybody that comes, we'll be creating some baseline dishes, and I'll make salads out of the gardens as well. But then we ask people if they want to contribute a dish to the day that really is sourced with local ingredients. And that will bring together everybody that's worked all morning around the table, which I always think is a nice
way
to
really
go from
cool.
seed to table.
That'll be fun. I love those slow food potlucks. I haven't been to one for ages, but
that sounds great.
Well, this one is a little outside our normal scope of things, but I paired it up with an event in the afternoon that really lets you sit back on your backside in the afternoon after a morning of work. Even if you don't come to the morning's cleanup or the potluck lunch for the people at the cleanup, we have an afternoon that's tied to slow food and the RAFT project. RAFT is Renewing America's Food Traditions. And because of help with Chefs Collaborative and Slow Food, we're able to give away heirloom seeds and plants that the UNH greenhouses are helping us grow out. Those are plants that really have a history of being grown right here in our community. It might be the bean that was found in the wall of a 17th century house in the Puddle Dock neighborhood, or something that pollen analysis showed us was growing in that neighborhood, but also plants that are part of the new ARC and RAFT of Taste nominations and awards of the last year, so that we're getting those plants that are meaningful in from our local economy back in everybody's hands. So you might be getting a trophy tomato or a Jimmy Nardello Peppa, or the seeds of cranberry beans or Boothby Blonde cucumbers. But instead of just giving plants away, we also have a whole afternoon of workshops. For kids, we have heirloom seed planting. For families, we'll get out in the garden and plant those raft seeds right in the gardens at Strawberry Bank. But I'll also have a lot of speakers in that I could tell you more about now or later.
Yeah, no, we're on a roll.
Well, we've got in some great folks through the afternoon. I'll have somebody coming down from Slow Food Portland, David Buchanan.
Oh, yeah.
Talking about slow food in the garden and the Arc of Taste and the raft programs, learning more about those heirloom seeds and plants from the ground up. I actually have Michelle Moon coming back in to do a great thing about genetic diversity, but in a way that's accessible to families and understanding why projects like Arc and Raft and Slow Food have meaning in our backyards. I'll be doing a talk called Slow Food, Sustainable Gardens that focuses on community-based projects and what we can really all do to come together to reconsider the way we grow and eat and live in our environment. Because when we plant, we're not just planting for ourselves. We are really creating a better environment to live in. We're creating an ecosystem that the animals around us benefit from. When you're using native plants, you're putting in pollinators, plants for butterflies, bees, things that were supposed to be here that the birds and the animals were also reliant upon. But at the same time, once you put a Jerusalem artichoke in, you can eat well through the winter and the spring from a native plant that fed generations for 8,000 years in this region. So it's making those connections with some great workshops all throughout the afternoon.
Something you said a little bit ago, I wanted to ask you about pollen analysis to find out what...
Yeah,
that was like,
curious
what,
about that too.
What is that all about?
Well, this is one of the things that brought me to Strawberry Bank, is that there are five sites in the whole world that teach about change over time in an original landscape. And Strawberry Bank in your backyard is one of them. When we work with evidence like pollen analysis, it's kind of like reading back through the rings of a tree, but you're working with a core extracted from the ground, and the layers of pollen from each season can be read like the rings of a tree almost.
Wow.
You can analyze the grains of pollen and recognize what grains come from what, and the seeds that were also found in the ground as well.
From how far back?
You can go back to the time the glaciers receded.
Oh my gosh,
yeah.
That is amazing.
Yeah. And that's the kind of, that's why museums need your support.
Yeah.
And when I say support, that means you need to go out to museums, public gardens, parks, all the places where there's learning to be found for a family that anchors you in a sense of place like nothing else. And that's what we want to be there for, is for the farmers, for the growers, the chefs, everybody to gain a sense of what you could really be growing based in evidence like that. In the same house that those gardens were excavated archaeologically, we know what the beds were built from. We see where orchard planting holes were, the fence line, the seeds and plants growing, but then also seed packets found in the walls of houses in the neighborhood that range from 17th through 19th century that tell us what households were growing.
So why were they found in the walls?
You know, I could make up a lot of historically relevant
reasons. Yeah, let's
reasons.
Make up
yeah,
something.
I was wondering how you decide this.
Basically, the answer is it's like the shoes they find behind walls. We don't know. It could be based in superstitions. It could be based in storage techniques, mice or vermin dragging it into the walls. It happens often. So it was done for a reason, but historians don't really know the reason why.
So through this pollen analysis, what kinds of things were surprising that they found?
Well, you don't read into the minutiae. You know, seed analysis, you know better that they were growing carrots in that garden and white carrots and things like that. But through the pollen analysis, nothing that really surprises me tremendously because it's the larger overview of everything in the surrounding area. So sunflower family plants like Jerusalem artichoke, sorrel being in that garden, and that could be the wild sheep sorrel or the garden sorrel, but you know, largely it's sorrel, and that's what's an important piece of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Again, things that extended the gardening season. But that roses have had a very long presence in this area. Of course, I'm sure you can guess you'd see a lot of white pine pollen based in your experience with the hood of your car at certain seasons.
Right.
But what's really interesting when you're looking back with pollen analysis is that it gives you snippets of what our landscape looked like throughout the centuries and, you know, through thousands of years, knowing what was here when the glaciers receded, what started to grow in. And that tells us a lot about not just forest succession, but the way people lived in the landscape.
Man. How many gardens do you have over at the bank?
Well, we have probably about 10 different gardens that range from native landscapes all the way through. We have the 17th century raised bed kitchen gardens, an 18th century dooryard garden. We have the gardens of immigrant families, like the Shapiro family, a Ukrainian Jewish family that came to live in Puddle Dock in the early 20th century.
Cool.
Really, things that tell stories about every generation that lived here. The Aldrich Garden, which we just restored for its 100th anniversary, and which just won the New Hampshire Preservation Alliance Award for Outstanding Achievement for that restoration, is a 1908 Colonial Revival garden with this beautiful circular hemlock grove that's now almost 100 years old.
That's cool.
A Victory Garden that the Pecunis family kept, a high Victorian greenhouse that came from Wentworth by the Sea, and the gardens of Sarah Goodwin, who was the Civil War era governor's wife. But then
Any relation, Allie?
Yes.
Oh, seriously?
Seriously,
yes. Don't you see the resemblance?
Yeah. don't I look just like her?
what sort of relation?
Well, it's distant. I think we've five cousins over. I think we figured out Governor Goodwin was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Distant. But yes.
But you can meet a role player who's gardening in that garden who looks absolutely nothing like you.
Thanks.
Or sound like you. But as another way to get families involved. And then we have teaching gardens. A few years ago, I created a Victorian children's garden that now master gardeners teach in every morning from 10 to 12. We have kids programs in that garden, new Victory Garden programs. We have teaching orchards. And this year, actually, I was just talking to Ben Watson, we'll be adding in one of the Arc apples New Hampshire into our historic orchard there.
Yeah.
In fact, yesterday I just spoke with a 104-year-old lady who personally helped plant the slips in that orchard through a fund that they created with Garden Clubs of America. And it's so great when you're reminded, talking to a 104-year-old who really could have been 74, when if you met her you wouldn't know the difference. The importance of having planted trees in your life that now leave a legacy. You know, things like that are... they still inspire me, and I do this every day.
Oh,
it's just a great reminder all of us. Get out and plant something, because
something lives
on from it.
Yeah.
Hey, you're listening to Portsmouth Community Radio, WSCA LP 106.1 FM, and I just wanted to mention that this Saturday we have a WSCA fundraiser. It's a concert with Christine Lavin and Don White. A funny twofer of comedy and song. And that's Saturday, April 10th at 7:30 p.m. It is a fundraiser for WSCA, Portsmouth Community Radio. And it's at the South Church at 292 State Street in Portsmouth. If you want tickets, go to www.portsmouthcommunityradio.org or www.kennebunkcoffeehouse.com. You can also get tickets at Bull Moose Music, Fa La Lo in Portsmouth, Odyssey and Oracle in Portsmouth, Acoustic Outfitters in Stratum, or by phone at 207-229-0212. And also, tonight on WSCA 106.1 FM, you get a special program about Jazzmouth, or is it Jazzmouth?
Jazzmouth.
From 7 to 8. Get a preview of Jazzmouth.
It's not Portsmouth.
The Seacoast Poetry and Jazz Festival tonight from 7 to 8. And a special live broadcast. Join show host Bruce Pingree as WSCA features Larry Simon and the Groove Bacteria, along with writers Matt Gallant, Michaela Russell, Madeline Coria, and Ryan Kerrigan. The Jazzmouth Festival is April 22nd through the 25th, and in addition to dozens of local musicians and writers all over Portsmouth, it'll feature Ray Manzarek, formerly of The Doors, and poet-writer Michael McClure, as well as Robert Pinsky.
No.
Who I, our former poet laureate,
yeah,
who I did a little story about.
On him.
And that would be Saturday evening, April 24th at the Music Hall. Information on tickets and the full Jazzmouth Festival schedule are available at jazzmouth.org. And that's going to be really cool. There'll be a lot of finger snapping and beat poetry going on.
I can't believe you're not doing something.
Like William Shatner.
William Shatner-esque for that little jazz mouth.
Oh, and can I also mention next Thursday, April 15th, our Spotlight Awards.
Yeah.
For the first time ever, 16 years, Best Chef category
That's
chosen by our jury and also chosen, there's also a favorite best chef from People's Choice.
Yeah.
The people have chosen.
The people have chosen. Yeah. And we'll be up on stage and you can come and, like, heckle us.
No, you cannot heckle us. You can give. You can whistle at
whistle
us.
Whistle and throw stuff.
Yeah.
Like candy and flowers.
And that's going to be at the music hall as well. It's a really great night of music. There'll be lots of live music and art, theater, and all of our great artists. And
it's going to be really fun. There's going to be a lot of really talented, amazing people.
Oh, it's a blast.
Under one roof.
Yeah, and then there's an after party, which I'm not sure where it is yet.
Yeah, but we better find out.
Okay, after party.
After party. So, question for John.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. We were talking about how many gardens you have, but what's your favorite garden at Strawberry Bank? Do you have a favorite?
It depends on the season, I think, because they all have a lot of beauty in different seasons. But I think the herb garden is something that's really meaningful to me because it bridges all centuries and it helps people understand how to use the plants they're already growing. We had whole systems in play, like Chinese and Ayurvedic medicine, in our own culture. And today, with science, we're realizing that this isn't all just about folklore. To accurately convey history, we need to understand both and help people understand how to incorporate these things into their lives. And so, to me, that's a really meaningful space. Having designed the new children's garden, I also would love to say that that's another favorite, just because, you know, there are studies out now that show that kids today.
Yeah.
You walked rotten uphill up both ways to get here, too, didn't you?
But they'll know over 1,000 corporate logos, but less than 10 plants and animals in their own backyard.
Ooh. Isn't that awful?
We need to all remember, we're the next generation of elders out in our garden. Sorry, even you.
Some guys. Of us,
some of us are elders. Elder than the rest. But that we need to start doing whatever we can to get the next generation engaged in all of this, because if you get in a garden, you realize that real reality can be a whole lot more engaging than virtual reality, and they need to know both worlds.
Mm-hmm. This is true. We have a farm, and my nephew, he's been raised on it, so he's pretty self-aware when he's in the garden. You know, this is my bean teepee, and, you know, look, it's already halfway up, and, you know, I mean, he's really proud of all the things that he's got in his space. So,
and it's an awareness that they come into life just much more engaged as community members, and I think it really helps in a lot of ways when they inherit everything we've left them, that they know how to create something from all of that.
That's very cool.
And I mean, Alice Waters, for example, through her lunch programs, you know, growing their own food for lunch in schools, mm-hmm. You know, they're finding in inner cities, for example, kids who, you know, averse to these vegetables before because they just had not been exposed to them, when they grow it themselves, they are excited to eat them and bring it home to their own families.
Yeah.
And studies are showing, too, anything that's been stored, or especially if you harvest it unripe, ship it 3,500 miles, as is the average today, then the nutritional value is so much less. But if you, like during the Victory Garden movement, another one of my favorites, I have to say, what I love about that was kids were encouraged to dig up their lawns with their families and plant gardens. And we went from producing a very small percentage of our food in the advent of canning and freezing to just half of the nation's produce being grown in backyard Victory Gardens because it was the thing to do. And that's a trend that I really want to help reintroduce into this country, is that sense of hopefulness that we can. Yes, we can. No,
yes, we can.
We're not too busy to do this in our backyards. We're not too busy to do it, but we also owe it to our kids to do it with them so that they learn these skills, because they'd already forgotten by World War II as well. It took retraining by cooperative extension services and universities and museums.
Hmm. Well,
got a lot of stuff going on over there at Strawberry Bank that's really great. And this event is Saturday, April 24th. Rain date of the 25th. It starts at 8:30 a.m. You meet at the Tyco Visitor Center and goes until 4:30 with all kinds of things in between.
Yeah, and we'll have, you know, coffee and snacks there in the morning, a great lunch in the middle of the day. We do ask, though, if you can go to our Strawberry Bank website and RSVP if you think you could make it, because it really helps me designing out the work plans for every garden to know who we'll have and to plan out the lunch and the tools. But if you think you could make it, tell your friends, grab your family, and please come out and join us on that day. It's a great way to learn from a community of volunteers that already works in the gardens, as well as the horticulture staff.
And you'll meet new people.
I know.
That'll be fun.
New friends in the garden.
New friends in the garden. Eat salad, Burnett. Lovage.
Some lovage. Did you eat out at all during restaurant week?
I was actually away. I did a lot of lecturing that... Well, no, I wasn't lecturing. I was at the Boston Flower Show.
Oh, the Flower Show, yeah.
The Herb Society, we created a still room and taught about distillation and how you made cordials.
Oh, yeah, you make your own cordials.
Waters and essential oils and things like that. So I was gone the whole week.
The whole week. Well, we ate out. We ate out some.
We ate at Pesce. Italian kitchen.
Skinny girls eat out all the time.
Yeah, we did go to Pesce.
That was good.
That was yum. That was really yum. The panna cotta. If I could just eat that all day.
Tart cherry.
Yeah, if I could just eat that all day long, I would.
And the tart cherries helped you digest all that.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay.
Absolutely.
Good. I was wondering what was going on.
That's right. No, yeah, that was a good dinner. That was a fun night. That was your book release celebratory.
Yeah, I was like, I have to go out.
I have to get out of my house. Yeah, and the decks are open.
The decks are open. The new Poco's deck will open today.
Opens today.
Yep, and it's all green, and I'm going to get more information on that because the owner's wife, Marlisa, and she did the 2 Series Street all green and all
LEED certified.
Yeah, I don't think it's LEED certified. So I'm going to get some more information on that. Do a story about that.
Cool.
And and then of course, River House will have a double deck around Memorial Day. So
great.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's going to be. Don't drink too much on the second deck.
Don't drink
too much. Woozy.
Woozy deck. And I saw Jay McSherry's got his place coming together.
Yeah.
Over on
106 Kitchen and Bar.
Mm-hmm. And Green Leaves is taking over where Chiang Mai was.
Yeah, so we have Chinese food downtown and hot pot. They're going to do hot pot, which is so healthy.
I love it.
You know, if you do it right.
If you do it right.
So healthy, yeah. I mean, you could throw foie gras and Twinkies in there,
but... Right. No, hot pot's good. That's cool. There's all kinds of
I wonder if John knows anything about the new restaurant going in at the old Dunaway space.
Well, I just heard today that it opens on April 28th.
April 28th.
Wow.
All right.
And I think it will be the space is very much transformed. And it's looking very different in there. And the menu should be intriguing.
Okay.
Is that all you're allowed to say?
I don't know that much more. I've met the chef, and I've had great conversations with the chef.
He brings a very interesting
background to all of this.
From,
and it's not
from
like
South
anything
Africa.
We have here in Portsmouth that I've seen so far. So
yeah, that'll be interesting.
But April 28th, I hear that.
Cool.
Happening.
All kinds of good stuff coming up for spring in Portsmouth.
Or Portsmouth.
Or Portsmouth.
Portsmouth.
Or Portsmouth. Yep, and on the other side of the bridge, AJ's Wood Fire Pizza is... going. It's
yeah, we
going.
Saw John 40 there.
Yeah, we
beckoned John 40 into
right.
the AJ's.
That's right. We ate there again last week. It was delish. Yep, it's getting better and better. So, yeah, and they deliver. That's the best part.
I know. I haven't seen one of the little cars yet.
Little crust ones. And
yeah,
crusty.
I'll have to get some deliveries soon.
They're so cute.
That'll be fun.
So, we've got a lot going on. We've got the cookbook coming out next year.
Yeah. In the meantime,
Spotlight Awards, April 15th. We've got the...
Summer at
Strawberry Bank. I know. And the work party. And there's a lot of stuff going on for Earth Day in the area. That's a nice thing to
see. Blue Moon Market is having a dinner with Chefs Collaborative, also on the 24th. At night. So after you're done at Strawberry Bank, you can go down there at 6:30 or 8 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. Our next slow food potluck beyond this one is also coming up at Blue Moon Cafe. And we'll have a hands-on greens workshop prior to the potluck, and then everybody gets together around that. So that's another thing to check out the Slow Food website for, is some more of the coming events with slow food that should be a lot of fun.
Slowfoodseacoast.org?
Yeah.
That's great. Well, cool.
And their farmers markets are going to be open, so... Man, I'm not giddy.
I'm starving.
spring.
Ah, spring. That's right. That's right. I am blanking it out today.
What's wrong with you?
Lots going on. Wow. Yeah.
There
okay.
You go.
I keep getting visions and then I lose it. Sorry. Not my radio day today.
Well, for our first Wednesday of the month, we'll see you in two weeks for our third Wednesday of the month.
And we promise we won't forget this time.
And it's just keeping track.
Just keeping track.
And that's Wimey Dimey. Thank you, John Forty, from Strawberry Bank, strawberrybank.org. And check out the Earth Day Volunteer Cleanup, Slow Food Potluck, Lunch, and Heirloom Seed Plant In on Saturday, the 24th of April.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Great to see you all.
Well, I'm walking, I ran from one end of this land to the other like an athletic fool. Found a playing tennis with the countesses of Venice, courting princesses and heated swimming pools. Back and forth across the ocean, southern Spain and Nova Scotia, chasing women till my face is turning blue. Now my pencil's out of lid, I'll just lay up in bed with my scissors and my paper and my glue. Cause the cardboard girlfriend's much to be preferred to paper mate. I'll take my exercise at home with her. Oh, nothing could be sweeter than my sweetie when I treat her like a dartboard on the wall. That's my great big corrugated chipboard paper doll. Touche.
shadows he saw on the shade. It was the great Philadelphia lawyer making love to his Hollywood maid. The night was as still as the desert, the moon hanging high overhead. Bill listened a while to the lawyer. He could hear every word that was said. Your hands are so pretty and lovely, your form so rare and divine. Run away with me to the city and leave that wild cowboy behind. Pennsylvania, among the beautiful pines, there's one less Philadelphia lawyer in old Pennsylvania tonight.
You shake my nerves and you rattle my brains. kind of love drives a man insane. You broke my will, but what a thrill. Goodness gracious, great balls of fire.
If you'll only look and see, I know you will agree that the taxes on the farmer feeds us all. Farmer is the man, farmer is the man, buys on a credit onto a farm. Then they take him by the hand, and they lead him through the land, and the merchant, he's the man that gets it all. While the woman uses snuff, and they never get enough, but the farmer is the man that feeds them all. While the farmer's black and dirty, but he works like a turkey, got good clothes a-hanging in the hall. If you'll only look and see, I know you will agree that the taxes on the farmer feeds us all. The farmer is the man, farmer is the man, buys on a credit onto a farm. Then they take him by the hand, and they lead him through the land, and the merchant, he's the man that gets it all. While the judge is on the bench, he will scratch his head and wink, but the farmer is the man that feeds them all. But the lawyer, I'll declare, will tell a lie and swear, but the farmer is the man that feeds them all. The farmer is the man, farmer is the man, buys on a credit onto a farm. Then they take him by the hand, and they lead him through the land, and the merchant, he's the man that gets it all. If you'll only look and see, I know you will agree that the taxes on the farmer feeds them all. While the doctor hangs around and the blacksmith works his arm, but the farmer is the man that feeds them all. And the preacher and the cook, they'll go fishing on the brook, but the farmer is the man that feeds them all. If you'll only look and see, I know you will agree that the taxes on the farmer feeds them all. Farmer is the man, farmer is the man, buys on a
my credit until fall. Then they take him by the hand, and they lead him through the land, and the merchant, he's the man that gets it all.
Joy bells ringing,
where my friends
and loved ones wait.
Oh, I can hear,
the angels singing
just inside
those pearly gates. I can hear my Savior calling, won't you come unto me, wash away your sins forever, you shall rest eternally.
I can hear
joy bells ringing
where my friends
and loved ones wait.
Singing
just inside
those pearly gates.
Now I'm sitting with my Jesus. He will guide me on my way. I will sing His praise forever. We'll meet in heaven some sweet day.
Joy bells ringing
where my friends and loved ones wait.
Oh, I can hear
the angels singing
just inside
those pearly gates.
Oh, I can hear
joy bells ringing
where my friends
and loved ones wait.
Just inside
those pearly gates.
This is Fritz Weatherby. You are listening to WSCALP, Portsmouth, your community connection.